One of the most outrageous and charming drag performers I've had the pleasure of sharing a stage with is Austin, Texas' very own Max Sage, also known as Misanthrope. Max is an accomplished chef and recently wowed Food Network judges on Chop Sweets, a cooking competition where four confectionery artists battle it out to be America's next drag star, are tasked with making delicious desserts from some pretty weird ingredients.
As a pastry chef, Max certainly has an incredibly tasteful palate, but on stage as a drag queen, she lets her wicked witchery loose and causes a scandal wherever she goes. Today, pastry chef, drag queen, and wild child, Max Sage, joins us to reflect back on her reality TV contest appearance on Food Network's Chop Sweets and her rebellious nature as a drag queen in Austin, Texas.
Plus, how to dodge the TV censors with your clever double entendres.
And Neil Patrick Harris apologizes for his Amy Winehouse corpse charcuterie plate 10 years later.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello.
Hi, is this Max Sage?
This is Max Sage. This is Max Sage's Roadkill Cafe. You kill it, we grill it.
What's fresh on the griddle?
Ooh, well, what do you have? What have you hit lately?
Well, armadillos have moved into Southern Illinois because of climate change.
Oh my God, I saw an armadillo. So I've been living in Texas for 8 years, and I saw an armadillo for the first time like 2 years ago, and it absolutely blew my fucking mind.
Well, yeah?
Well, it's like they don't make sense as an animal, you know? Like they're goofy.
Fausto had an ACT UP t-shirt that had an armadillo on it.
It was because they were trying to make it a gay symbol in the late 80s, early 90s in Austin.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's not going to go.
Armadillos aren't sexy. They're not like bears or wolves or otters.
Yeah. Is there like a group of people that identify as armadillos?
I don't know. Are there people that just like ball up when they get scared?
They just shut down, introverted, bald.
Those are the puppies.
Oh, I love that for them.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, we're talking to Max Sage, the culinary artist, confectionery diva, also known in the drag scene in Austin, Texas as Misanthrope, because she don't like people.
Hate them. Absolutely hate them.
Why do you come up with that name? That's like a name saying to everybody, like, back off, bitch, but give me a tip.
Well, so I don't know. Drag for me has always been super subversive.
Yeah.
And it's just there's something tongue in cheek about telling people to go fuck themselves.
You are very punk, I gotta say.
Oh, girl. Yeah. I'm covered head to toe in tattoos.
And like, I've performed with you. And even I didn't feel safe.
Good.
So no story time for kids, Misanthrope? No.
That's the fun thing. I've actually done story times with kids.
All the kids started crying and their parents were like, why have you done this to us?
Yeah, I got put on all sorts of lists. I'm not allowed within 50 feet of schools. they usually just bill me as Miss Anne.
Oh. Which is nice. What's the full name, darling?
Well, she's divorced twice, so we don't go to kill children
didn't fly too well, so that's where you came up with Misanthrope.
No, I came up with Misanthrope because, like, the whole idea of drag to me, like, I found very early that drag is really, like, if you get it, you get it. And the people that get it really hold each other close and help each other and treat each other with respect. Mm. And the whole idea of, like, drag mother, drag children... that community really read to me. And so something about like pushing back and flipping that. And like, if you get drag, you get the joke of telling someone to go fuck themselves in a sense. And I also think there's something about setting yourself apart brand wise. You know, the market's so saturated with everybody that's trying to be Miss Congeniality and they want to be, you know, everyone wants to be this model citizen and hero. And I think drag shouldn't be that. Drag should kind of make you ask questions. And I, at the end of the day, I think it's hilarious.
Well, not Anthrope for president.
Well, not everybody could be Nina West. Come on, you know.
Oh, so my God.
You have to be.
The thing about it is that when we met Nina West, she was outside Austin Drag Festival smoking a cigarette and looking at me like she was ready to kill me.
That's not true.
It is true. And I was like, oh, hi, what's your name? And she's like, don't you know who I am?
That's not. Was it really
and
like
it
that?
It was totally like that. I was like, oh, it's Nina West. Oh, it's nice to meet you.
I've heard about you.
And then I just walked on and I she's since we've patched things up but she came at me hot. She
spicy.
Was not Mr. Rogers.
But she was more like
who wants to die for art? I was like, I got someplace to be.
I would love that. I mean, I think drag queens specifically should give a pass to people not recognize them. You know, drag today, there's so many of them. Everybody kind of looks the same. And then at the end of the day, you're a completely different person for the majority of your life. So if someone doesn't recognize, like I always get, if I'm out at a club or somewhere, someplace, somebody recognizes me in the sense that like, I'm a drag queen that looks like someone else. You know, I don't get offended. I don't like, I'm not, if someone doesn't know who I am, I'm not like, who gives a shit?
Well, you know, there's certainly shook some cages on social media and I'm not quite sure what happened. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you were like posting a status update that like only people call you when they need you, but they don't ever call you when, you know, just to hang out.
And that's what's kind of funny to me is like drag. Like I got into drag as sort of like I work in kitchens, man. And anybody that works in the restaurant industry knows that like when you're not in the kitchen, drinking, you're out drinking with your kitchen buddies. And it's kind of hard to exist in a world that's just so devoted to self-sabotage. So I use drag as kind of like a social scene to get out of that and find new drinking buddies, to be totally honest.
There's a tightness to like, you know, because I've worked in the restaurant and hospitality, like, you know, most of my life. And there's a tightness with the crew you work with. You know, you're in the trenches together. You really bond. And then, you know, you can be working together for, you know, 10 hours. And then you're like, let's go out. And so then you're out for another 4 or 5 hours.
No, and not for nothing. Like, there's the whole like everyone wants to talk about trauma bonding these days, which I think is an important thing to talk about in the restaurant industry. But also I think convenience bonding is a big thing. And a lot of the friendships and relationships you make working in restaurants is like you said, you've been working for 10 hours. You know, the last thing you want to do is go home and throw on a whole outfit and go hang out with a whole separate group of people.
Right.
Just purely out of convenience. You know, you're sitting at the bar you work at after you got out of a shift, hanging out and drinking with the same people you work with.
You're sweating at work. You're there. You wash your hair in the sink at work. And you're like, come on, let's go out to the bar and have some drinks.
Wash your hair in the sink.
Oh, yeah. I used to work in a Japanese steakhouse and your hair would smell like teriyaki sauce.
Oh, girl. So, yeah. No, like any restaurant you work at, that, like if I work in a kitchen that has more than like one or two deep fat fryers, like you spend more than a couple hours in the kitchen, your hair, you leave smelling like what was ever in that fryer.
And that spray hose that you have sometimes, because like it's kind of awkward to wash your face with it, so you have somebody else stand about 4 feet away from you and like
you take turns.
Hit my face
in the dish pit. I'm not allowed to go on record say you've totally washed my hair in the dish pit, because that's against health code.
Is it?
I don't know. I haven't. I think my food handlers is fucking expired.
Well,
at this
you
point.
Know everything that we say on this show, it could be a lie.
Entertainment purposes.
It's for
only.
Entertainment purposes only.
My legal like team French says tickers. I'm supposed to say allegedly after every sentence.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
One thing that's not allegedly is you're the only drag queen besides Cynthia Lee Fontaine in Austin, Texas, to be on reality television. Only you weren't a basic bitch and got on Drag Race. You pulled out the sharp knives and you slayed the competition twice. How many times were you on Chopped?
I was just on Chopped once. Chopped Sweets, yeah.
And you really, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but you did well.
I did well. I did well. And I'm happy with the result only because the Food Network basically pays you to, like, they gave me a free trip to New York, which is my old stomping ground. So they basically cut me a check for travel and accommodations, But I basically used travel points that I had saved up for the flight and then stayed with my good Judy cat. So I got like a free trip out of New York.
And some Cointata.
Yeah, the girls and the gals and girls that I competed against, we ended up becoming like good friends, and we chat from time to time. And
what about that cute French guy? He was really
tell us more about him.
Shit. Oh my god, my Siri just went off. He
heard me talk. Did you see him shirtless at all?
I wish, but like honestly, him and his wife, like
that wife.
I was gonna get into. I know it's dun dun dun.
Cancelled.
the Mattymorphosis is here.
Marriage is just a piece of paper.
I always say marriage is a good tax reason to do it. It's it helps with your taxes, allegedly.
Not always.
It didn't for me.
If you're really rich and your spouse is really rich, it's not not necessarily good to pay to get married, to file jointly. You know,
where the fuck were you 10 years ago? Jesus Christ!
Did you get married?
Yeah, scandalous.
To a woman? Ready?
But to a woman, a hot woman. She was hot at the time.
Well, you know, you identify as polyamorous and bicurious and all that good stuff, right?
When people ask, I say I say yes to life. You know, if the situation arises and there's tequila involved, who's there to say no?
Because you have a lot of challenge in tucking. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, girl, no,
I've been. I've seen you perform, and we've shared
what's tucking mean? I don't know what that is.
You know, giving the illusion that you're a beautiful woman
you have puss
with down. A vagina.
This is a perfect time to say allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. Yes.
But what about the French guy?
Yeah, so you were on Chop. With a really hot French guy who got eliminated. I don't want to say, let's give a little bit away. He got eliminated because he overfroze his ice cream.
That and like not for nothing, he was just struggling in general. I feel like for the main part of the competition, it was just kind of like vibing with the over ideal of the basket. Whereas he just kind of was going into it with like, I'm going to do, cause he's worked in some like really fucking nice Michelin starred restaurants all over Europe. And he, you know, he's French. So basically in preschool, they have him in vocational education, learning the five mother sauces. So this guy, like he fucking knew how to throw down some like really legit pastry skills. That's the funny thing about chop sweets specifically is pastry is so much devoted to technique and, you know, time. And this is a challenge that was like 30 minutes of throwing shit together. Mm-hmm. So not for nothing, like a lot of my dishes in the challenge was just kind of like, fuck it. I think I remember how to do this. I don't fucking know. And then standing in front of the judges with a shit eating grin and just kind of like defending it.
I was so impressed, you know, and I have to say, because I was in a similar situation, I did sign a non-disclosure, so I can't give too many details, but let's just say that it was a possibility that you and I could have been competing against each other.
Oh, scandalous.
In full drag.
See, and that's another thing. People always say, why didn't you do it in drag?
Because it wasn't that episode, but they are planning to do, or at least there was a discussion.
A cross-dressers one?
I guess no one's going to hear this, right? So they were planning to do
everything
of drag queen chefs in America, or cooks.
Oh my God.
And it was going to be you and me and a couple other food personalities who are also drag queens.
Have you guys looked into Joie de Vie at all?
What is that?
She's yes, one of like the first drag queens.
The Judy Garland. Liza Minnelli. Yes. It was the three.
What's the difference between Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli? I don't know. Can someone explain me the difference?
One's alive.
No one.
Again, a perfect time to use the term allegedly.
Yeah, so allegedly there was a show that was being in talks, and like I had the everything packed and ready to go, and they pulled the plug on it. But because it was so good, they didn't hand you to do it.
they probably got to my page and they were like, oh, her? No, well, we can't do it with her.
But I was like, you know, I was like crapping in my pants because, you know, so for people who are not familiar with the reality TV show Chopped, the premise is you're having four contestants, sometimes more, are given baskets, mystery baskets, with a challenge to take the ingredients in there and make something in about 30 minutes.
I don't know if this is against my NDA, but like, we had more than 30 minutes. It's kind of an illusion. It's television magic.
It's, you know, it's still fast. You do feel like you run out of time.
Can I give you some tea about my episode?
Yeah. So the girl that goes home
first, she struggled real hard and we weren't surprised she went home first.
She was the one who was doing the profiteroles.
Yeah. She did. The funny thing is you had to basically make like four plates, one for each judge, one for them to take photos of, and then like maybe one in case you fucked something up. Girl, after, you know, they're like, all right, you got 15 minutes left. You know, we look over and she's got six trays of pâte à jus piped out, like as if she's doing a banquet for 30. And we're like, girl, pump the brakes on that. You don't need 30 plates. And then we ended up having to go way past the 30 minutes because of her, because she kept like burning her sugar. And then, you know, it takes time to bake that many profiteroles or cream puffs or whatever. And then also it's worth mentioning that when we were backstage getting to know one another, she brought up that she's like, I work in the chocolate shop at the White House. And this was, you know, during those dark years. And she was like touting about how cool it was to like make chocolate for the president. And we're all backstage looking at her like, read the fucking room, honey. Like, nobody thinks that's
cool. She was a MAGA?
I don't think she was a supporter. She was just talking about how cool it was that she gets to cook chocolate for 45. And we're all standing there being like, that's not cool.
You should take a dump in the chocolate.
That's not hot. Well, I'm glad she got eliminated first.
I wish they had used the clip of me backstage, you know, because they have the cameras back there when we're all talking. And I wish they had the clip of me being like, well, I'm glad she went home because we had really nothing else to talk to her about.
That does happen to me sometimes at work. Like, I'll meet somebody and you're like, they're so nice and sweet and friendly. And then they're just like, I just, you know, think Donald Trump, like out of nowhere.
You know, I think he had some good ideas.
They were like, I don't feel like Trump got a fair shake.
I didn't vote for him, but I don't like what they're doing to him on Twitter. And you're just kind of like, what? I mean, play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Now, your dessert, when you made peach sorbet and then you fried a sage leaf to decorate it, to make it look like a giant juicy peach, was so delicious. It's so brilliant. That really... Because I was like, that first dessert that you did when you were like making this like bread stuffed with dragon fruit. When dragon fruit is a piece of shit fruit, you know?
Oh, girl, when I opened up and it was like a stout beer and fucking a dragon fruit, I was like, this is where I go home. And I was kind of shocked. I'm glad Cream Puff did so poorly. Because I honestly think I just grabbed that pizza dough from the pantry. Like they had that pre-made. So when they were like raiding me to filth being like, oh, you... The pizza dough was too puffy. I'm like, it's your pizza dough. You know,
you brought that from home. So.
And so, you know, so the premise here is that they're sort of like throwing you off. And if you don't use the weird ingredient or feature it in a certain way, then that also puts you up for elimination, right? So like,
And basically they give you like ahead of time, they told us like, I think a couple months in advance, they had told us what each challenge generally was. So like the first one, you got to do something fried. Second one, you got to do something frozen. And then the third one, you got to do something fantastical, which that one was the funniest for me because it was kind of like, well, what the fuck does fantastical mean? You know, like define fantastical. This can go a lot of different ways here.
A magical experience.
Well, girl, define magical experience.
Hello. Drag.
My definition of a magical experience, I think, would be a lot different than most people's.
So you're not one of those people, like, if we went to your restaurant to eat, you're not going to pour chocolate sauce into our hands and make us lick it out of our hands.
So I got into cooking at kind of a young age, and I'm still so young, so it was very, very soon.
In high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still fresh out of high school, maybe 2 years. No, I'm 30. I just turned 35. So I've been cooking professionally, I like to say, around 20 years, because I got into it when I was in high school in a vocational education program. And it was great to be a part of that program because it really taught me a lot about the trade and you know, having a way to support myself. But I've always been of the school of thought that it's food. You eat it to stay alive, you know? And if you can make it taste good and look cool, that's awesome. But I came into restaurants when all that was like a big fucking thing. You know, everything was circulated. Alinea was big up in Chicago where they had this dessert that they put this big silicone mat down and you smash it. I love that for the people that can afford it. But at the end of the day, like I said, food is food and it shouldn't really be that complicated. So if you're paying an extra $150 so they can pour the chocolate sauce on your hands, it's like, listen, I can pay you $150 to come work in a kitchen for a day and you'll get chocolate all over your hands, you know, making cookies and shit. It just seems goofy to me to put that on the upper tiers of like, this is fine dining. It's like, you're eating chocolate sauce off your hands. That's not, what's fine about that?
Yeah. Here in Chicago, there's an annual event that's a fundraiser for an AIDS nonprofit called the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. It's called World of Chocolate. And 1 year they had it was pretty controversial. It was they had a couple of black models, African American models, lying on a table almost naked, with chocolates on top of their body. And it was just like, you know, it's kind of like that naked sushi kind of thing. But I was just like, this is crossing a line here.
But the chocolate was delicious.
It was so good. And the models were beautiful, you know, and you wanted to lick the melted chocolate off their bodies. But that's another thing, you know, and it was a situation where it's like, you know, in terms of like extreme dining or food and performance, like people think that drag and, you know, cuisine arts in general don't have a lot to do with each other, but there is something to be shared there, right? It's about taking...
Oh, 100%. Well, and that's what kills me about is like, there's so much crossover between, like, some of the best drag queens I know.
Yeah.
Their day job is working in the service industry. And I think there is a level of, like, having that ability to... be that bubbly personality as a job. You know, I think a lot of entertainers these days get so much of their own personality wrapped up in being that like party girl and that like, you know, out at the club circuit mama type deal to the point where like they kind of run themselves into the ground a lot earlier than they should, trying to pertain this personality. When in reality, you know, I think, at least I view drag very much as it's a job and it's something that you can turn on and turn off. And if I'm getting paid to do it, I'm going to put more effort into that character and being friendly or like my version of friendly. And I think the service industry so much is like the same, like to be a good server, you have to like be able to turn that personality on. And if you're unable to turn it off, you end up, you know, becoming haggard quickly. They're developing some sort of problems.
Yeah, at the same time, like, you know, the drag queen brunch thing is just like, I don't know, as gay people, we just rely on brunch way too much.
And I grew up in New York on Long Island, and we would take the train into the city and we would go to this place called Lips where it was just like,
oh yeah,
there was drag queens serve like they'd get on the mic and sing a song, they do a little song and dance once in a while. But for the most part, it was just like a restaurant whose service staff was drag queens. And I've always been pulled to that idea of like, you know, drag queens are people. And as much as we like to represent false ideas of beauty and we like to represent ourselves as pop stars by lip syncing other songs, it's important to represent that like these characters are derived from real people that can interact in like a real way within society. So drag brunches, it's always, I've every time I see someone posting about a drag brunch, I always like to comment like, you know, will the drag queens be cooking or, you know, will the drag queens be bartending or, cause there's in Austin, there's none of that. Like drag queens do one thing and the people at the restaurants or whoever's holding the brunch do everything else, you know? And it's funny to me because it's like 9 times out of 10, you get these drag queens who are waitresses taking time off for their waitress job to do a $50 an hour spotlight gig at a drag brunch.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the early 90s when I lived in Austin and I was working as a drag queen, it was me, Jamie Perry, and a handful of other people. Like, it was not a community. And so if you were dressed up in drag, it was like you were on your own. Yep. You were a target, but just by putting on the wig, you know,
the gender outlaw.
Yeah. And so in some ways, you know, it, and this is the thing, like a lot of people lament today, they say, feel like drag queens are fighting with each other in their own community. But I'm like, at least you have a family to fight with.
No, listen. And that's the funny thing to me is hearing all this, like, drag queens need to be a family, all this fighting. It's like, I don't know how y'all handle y'all families, but me and my family, we're tight as thick as thieves, I guess you could say, but we fight all the time. And when we fight, you know,
and when
a good family gathering growing up during my childhood was like, it wasn't Thanksgiving unless the cops were called, you know? So this whole idea of like drag queens fighting can't be family. It's like, it's confusing to me. Cause like, I don't know, man.
Are we expecting drag queens to be, you know, family friendly, kid friendly, nice and pleasant and sweet?
I think Nina West ruined drag.
Oh, don't say that. We adore Nina. She's been a guest on the podcast.
And you know, because everyone says like RuPaul's Drag Race done ruined drag. I was like, it's, you know, it's just all these like nice drag queens. I'm like, be a rebel, you know. If I don't have to put a restraining order against you, you're not doing it right.
You're not doing drag.
You know, the thing about it is, I actually had. Came pretty close to having to put a restraining order on a drag queen. So I'm actually laughing about it right now, but it's like,
yeah, Nina West is probably listening to this right now going like, yeah, bitch, well, I have a restraining order on you. So,
well, Dan Levy, the son of Eugene Levy and the star of Schitt's Creek is working on a show.
I'm also the brunch one that he never called me about.
Yeah, and so what was the premise here? It was like a drag queen brunch show.
I don't know. He made an Instagram post just saying he's looking for talent. That it was like it was a show about brunch, you know. And I'm like, hey, gay representation over here. You want a cross dresser that cooks pastries? Never heard anything. Which is funny because some local girls had shot like a pilot for an HBO Max show a year or two ago. So like HBO Max has a tape of me, and I'm kind of like, how big is that fucking department that those paths didn't cross? You know, someone didn't say like, hey, Dan, you doing a show about brunch? I got this drag queen over here that cooks brunch.
You know what I say is man's rejection is God's protection. And the show, if that ever comes to light, it'll probably be a piece of shit, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think like, if I'm not involved and it's a show about brunch, it's definitely a fuck.
I adore Dan though.
Dan's really, same, you know, Dan but, shines. Like,
he never called me back. So
like, I feel like Dan Levy, you know, as a performer, as a comedian is great on Schitt's Creek, but he really shines on Hallmark movie channels.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He was with this one with, the girl from Twilight. The lesbian from
Kristen Stewart, Happily Ever After, or something like that.
And he was really good in that. Like, he was better on that than in Schitt's Creek.
Well, you never liked Schitt's Creek.
Though. I didn't care for it.
I liked Schitt's Creek. I watched Schitt's
Creek's
all of it.
Okay, because I feel like they're just redoing the same bits they've done elsewhere. Mm. You know,
I love dry humor, but like that shit, holy crap! I feel like I had to moisturize extra after watching it because it's just deadpan dry, deadpan dry.
It is. And so what I felt like his Hallmark movie channel, it was like there was just like they gave him a lot more room just to be himself, you know.
Did they give his eyebrows room? Because those definitely need.
You need some kosher salt for that dessert.
Here's the thing about Schitt's Creek that I don't that kind of bothered me is I would have to watch it in small doses because that one character Roland, he would do these fucking mouth noises that like I don't know what if that was written into the character, like do annoying mouth noises, but
what?
I just like
Chris Elliott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Elliott's always been annoying. Like, he was on a, he was kind of a weirdo from David Letterman.
Yeah. I feel like I've just always known him as the guy that just makes me feel uncomfortable.
Who was the guy who Freddie Got Fingered movie star?
Tom Green, the Leghorn.
He's the Tom Green of the 1980s.
Kind of, but he does it in this way that, like, he was in a lot of movies. Like, he's very prominent. He has a very prolific career. But he's always that, like, weirdo, kind of, like, makes you feel uncomfortable type.
So if he's the Tom Green of the 1980s, what, and you're a drag queen on Chopped, what drag queen are you most like in the Chop franchise?
What
analogy to Drag Race? Are you the Willem of Chopped, or?
I'd like to think I'm the misanthrope of Chopped, only because I don't like to compare my personality to other drag queens.
I know you don't.
But being that, like, I don't know, my personality is something new and fresh and better. Like, imagine if Jackie Beat was actually taking her medication.
Jackie takes meds? Like rabies she medication or what?
She's of the Ivermectin. Dementia meds or something. She's up in the ages now. We're like, come on.
Oh, come on. She's barely even 60, right?
Well, she's had a, what is it that Lady Bunny said? She's had a
hip surgery.
Hip surgery and knee surgery so she can run away after you see her show and ask for a refund. Now, you managed to sneak away a lot of double entendres. My favorite line where they were like eating something that looked very creamy, and you said, "Love is my secret ingredient."
That was honestly, like, I can only imagine the poor quality and standards dude sitting in the editing room being like, "No, you can't take that." Like, they had to reshoot so much of my specific parts, because, like, when I got Chopped specifically, right, it's like this huge intense moment where we're all lined, like the remaining chefs are lined up, and they're like, they keep doing these like swinging shots with the boom camera to make sure, like, and then they finally do the reveal where they pull the silver thing up and whose dish it is, and they're expecting, you know, to, like, you crap your pants and be like, "Oh man, I just lost, my life is over, this is it for me." But I didn't, I don't take anything seriously. And this is the last thing I took seriously. I kept hitting on the host the whole time. So when they pulled the thing up and I see that it's my dish and I'm eliminated, the first thing I say is I just go, "Oh, well, that's homophobic." And they had to be like, "Okay, cut, stop, reel back, we got to reshoot it."
No, you didn't. Did you really?
And we had to shoot it like 3 or 4 times because, like, the director's like, "No, you have to seem sad." And then I love what they went with is just me just like looking, like shrugging, not saying anything. There was one where, you know, it's like big tense moment, the camera comes in, it's the reveal, and I just went womp womp, and they're like, no, "You're sad, you just lost $10,000.
We don't want to give too much away, so we want people to watch it.
It's a good episode.
It's a really great episode. You can actually watch it for free if you just search for Chopped Sweets. It's called Boozy Sweets, season 1,
Boozy
episode
baskets,
2.
Boozy Baskets, yeah.
Is it Boozy Baskets or Boozy Sweets?
Boozy Baskets. I thought it was listed as Boozy Baskets.
Let me
search
that. But yeah, it's a good, you know, episode. And I think, was it Boozy Baskets? Probably it is, yeah.
Boozy B-holes. Try searching that.
Boozy. It is Boozy Baskets. My apologies. Sorry, people.
It's quite all right. I'll have my legal team get in touch.
Baskets. And, you know, in terms of, like, when you found out you were going to be on the show, I imagine that you were just, like, kind of crapping in your pants. You're going, and you're like, "Oh,
yeah, I
can
use
this for
dessert."
Yeah, I was
kind of over the moon. Because, like I said, like, I started cooking and working in kitchens when the Food Network was, like, really starting to become prominent, and, like, cooking shows in general were becoming like a thing. And I remember back when, like, those shows, there was only like one or two of them, you know, there was Chopped and I think MasterChef or something, you know. And I've always kind of said that, like, it would be fun to take my personality on one of those shows, but also it would be fun kind of like as a tick box to check off in my career goals. Because nowadays, you know, it's really hard to be kind of taken seriously in a profession like pastry eating. in if you don't have like credentials like that, if you don't have things that kind of stand out on a resume. I will say that like one of the best experiences I got from that was one of the judges, Paula Degato. She ended up becoming a good gal pal of mine, and I put her on my resume, you know, as a reference.
The blonde?
Yeah, the blonde.
Yeah, she seemed like she really liked you. And I almost felt like it really, had you not had that pizza dough be so thick, you might have actually won the whole the 10 grand.
I agree with you, but I also think that like Chef Lean's dish, like her, like she knew exactly what the fuck she was doing when it came time to that like fantastical, like her dessert really did what it needed to do. As cool as mine was, I will say I was kind of robbed in the sense that my dessert, if you remember, was like a s'mores inspired. So it was very campfire smoky. I did like cryo shattered charred marshmallows with like the best chocolate ice cream Paula Degato has ever had in her entire life. But it was served in this wine goblet. And the whole idea presentation wise for like fantastic was I was going to like pour nitrogen, liquid nitrogen over the ice cream kind of tableside. So the wine goblet kind of like let off that it dispersed into like kind of like a misty fog and gave the illusion of like a campfire. Right. Mm-hmm. But as I'm, you know, like dish is finished, they're saying, hey, we got to put them up. I'm like about to pour the liquid nitrogen into the glass. And the safety person on set came over and was like, oh, like we can't have you pouring the liquid nitrogen into the wine glass. And I'm like, well, A, it's not a lot. And B, why, you know? And they're like, well, cause we're worried that it's going to like shatter the glass. And I was kind of like, well, I mean, they're like nice tempered wine goblets. Mm. Like I've done this before. Like this shouldn't be an issue, you know? And they were like, no, you can't do it. And I was like, all right.
The competition and the experience of the competition change the way you cook?
100%. Only because really? I think nowadays, like it's easier for me to separate like what looks good and what actually tastes good. And like the reality of having something like how you can kind of fudge it. And now, like I will say now when
it
I watch
make you crumble shows, like a cookie.
Girl. No, it left me moist like a muffin.
Well, I imagine like, you know, that's the thing about it as I felt with Chopped is that the show doesn't really allow you to discover the personalities of the contestants as much as other reality TV show programs. Because it's so focused on the food.
I will say like, I do feel like if I were to ever do venture into the reality cooking competition format again, it would be something that is more than one episode and really does give the personality to kind of shine. Because I will say like as much magic as we did get on camera, it was limited, very limited to, 30 minutes, like, or what is it? 20, the runtime, I think is like 23 minutes. So they just really cut us down to just quick snippets. And a lot of what they ended up using, was, so when they shoot the show, basically you go in at 4 a.m. and you do the challenges until you get eliminated. So the longer you're in the competition, the longer you're there. And then at the end of it, when you get eliminated, they basically like have makeup come, throw a fresh lather of paint on you, and then sit you down and do all the exit interviews, which take like an hour, 2 hours. And basically that's like them asking you about everything that happened throughout the day. And at that point, I was like fucking fried. So a lot of that like in between challenges shit you see of me like talking about it where I'm like, I'm going to slay. It's just like, I'm fucking exhausted. And like, I had basically got sent home and eliminated and not gotten the money I wanted. So I was just kind of like sitting in a chair telling, like spitting out the lines they wanted me to say.
Oh, so all of that's recorded after you had already lost.
Yeah, exactly. And it was funny because like I said, like I wasn't like shattered. I was just the shoot ended up being like 14 hours in total. So by the time I sat down in that chair doing the exit interviews, I had been like on my feet for 12 hours and was tired. And the assistant director who I had like really kind of bonded with kind of came to me and she was like, you know, we're just setting up for these exit interviews. Is there anything that, you know, would kind of get you through it and really give us that, you know, TV magic? And I said, girl, I had been 8 months sober up until that point. And so I said, girl, a shot of whiskey wouldn't hurt. And kind of jokingly, but also like not kind of jokingly. And she comes back with like a coffee cup full of whiskey. And so I just proceeded to drink that as quickly as possible and do the interview. And so that's why I was kind of just like spitting lines, and they were like, now, can you say slay? And I was like, slay. can you do a work for us? And I'm like, work.
You got the vocal fry going.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the contestants on these kind of shows leverage their appearance onto having successful cooking online presence on, you know, TikTok or Instagram or, you know,
get jobs, all sorts of stuff.
Well, and you're sort of like already established and you have a good career, but was there ever a temptation for you to like be like, I'm gonna, you know, be Max Pancake Sage on TikTok? Or
100%, and that's, I get that all the time. Like, people will reach out to me and say like, you should do a YouTube series, or you should do, and I 100% agree. Like, I would love for my career to take that path, but as it stands, like, I don't think people realize that to get to that point and like to get the career to be able to go on something like Chop Suites, I work, you know, 3 40-hour-a-week jobs, you know, and that's not an exaggeration. I spend so much of my time kind of supporting myself doing these things that give me that kind of illustrious title, that when it comes time to like make a YouTube show about it, I'm like, where, when, you know, how,
well, you're always, you know, I've invited you and you're always welcome to come on Cooking with Drag Queens, even though right now the series is in hiatus, but
let's bring her back.
You know, the thing about it is like with the COVID pandemic, the show required having a lot of people in a small room together. Yeah. And so people don't want to do that anymore. And so in terms of that, you know, we're sort of like converting it into a streaming experience.
Yeah.
But if you're ever in Chicago, let's do it, you know, because you're really one of the most knowledge. I mean, your baking skills alone and doing like bagels or it's really extraordinary.
That's what I'm kind of doing right now is I'm overnight baking for three places, basically. Jeez. And just going in and kind of cranking out, you know, hundreds of hamburger rolls, loaves of bread, cookies, all that kind of stuff. Because baking really is—it's my bread and butter. Not to be too literal about it.
Well, normally, you know, in cooking with drag queens, we're showing the drag queen how to do something. But in this case, you have so much knowledge and expertise, it would be better that you showed us.
Oh my God, I would love to just sit and talk about the amylase enzyme in sweet potato and how it lends beneficial to gluten development in sourdough breads.
What?
So you could use like sweet potatoes to improve the quality of a sourdough bread?
So yeah, essentially like what you're trying to do when you're making something like a sourdough bread is you need something like thyme, and thyme is because you're allowing like things to digest, right? Yeah. And so a lot of enzymatic action happens to digest the starches, to give the yeast food, and then to also take the complex proteins and break them down. Or I'm sorry, take the base proteins and make them into more complex proteins. But not everybody has time, right? So you can take something like sweet potato that contains an enzyme named amylase, and you can add that into your dough so that what happens is it speeds up that enzymatic process, and it helps digest your dough to where you're getting like really lengthy gluten strands, you're getting nice starch, so it helps retain moisture, and
adds
then you're
a little
also
bit of sweetness to it or not
add a little bit of sweetness, but in the sense that you're actually giving the food, like you're kind of kickstarting the yeast, you're giving, because essentially the sugar that you're adding to bread, although it is there for flavor, it's there to kind of feed your leavener. Yeah. Well, it's the gas. The engine technically would be the yeast.
The yeast.
So could
you
tell like a bread that's made with sweet potato? Does it like look more orange or something?
Yeah. Well, so a lot. And this is where it gets fun. When the FDA initially defined bread, right? You were only allowed to have like four ingredients in it: salt, water, flour, yeast, and I think sugar. If you put anything else in it, it's like, you can't call it bread. But nowadays, according to FDA guidelines, you can have up to like 20 something different things in it and still call it bread. Most of those things are preservatives and what we call dough conditioners, right? So like everything I described sweet potato doing, you can use like diacetic malt powder or different additives to condition the dough. Sweet potato is just something that like you can have it. It's natural. It adds to the bread without being some sort of chemical grossness you have to order off Amazon. You can tell, but it really is just like a dough conditioner. You'd have to add enough of it for it to really change the color of the bread for you to go like, oh wow.
So that's like good. For example, if you were just to make one loaf of bread with sweet potato, like how much sweet potato would you be adding to that dough?
You'd probably take like one or two decent sized sweet potatoes and roast them in the oven.
That many?
Puree them up. Yeah, I mean, if you want to, Hawaiian rolls, like King's Hawaiian rolls, yeah. Those have potatoes. Like the reason those have such like a fluffy retain moisture property to them is that those have potatoes added to them.
Well, that's the thing. It might be fun is with you is to do one of those like quick, no need or, you know, easy bread recipes, mm-hmm. but, you know, make it in a way that, because part of it is like, I like cooking shows where people actually are inspired to do what you see.
Yeah.
And I 100%. Feel like Martha Stewart, as beautiful as her programs were, sometimes it just felt like overwhelming and you're just like, well, this is just too much work, you know?
Well, there's also the disconnect of like, you know, you're watching one of these women cook a loaf of bread, talking it out about how easy it is. In, you know, a temperature and humidity controlled environment with her $300 Le Creuset set of, you know, cast iron pots and an oven that was at least $4,000 that has all sorts of time. You know, for me, those cooking shows have a disconnect because it's like, lady, you're saying it's easy, but you have the tools and equipment to make it easy. You know, I want to see it made easy by someone that doesn't have all that. You know, I want to see someone that doesn't have the $200 pizza stone that turns their home oven into a bread baking wonder.
Yeah. And then that's the thing I really like about that approach is, you know, and that's something maybe we could do is do sort of have the dough already ready to go, but show how the dough is made and then use a Dutch oven to, make a boulet loaf.
Hip, hip. Well, technically it's pronounced boule, but because of drag, we'll go with boulet.
Really? Have I been mispronouncing it all this time?
Yeah, it's boule.
A boule loaf? Really?
I mean, I've had French people tell me it's boule, so I might be wrong. Yeah,
boule is ball, then, right?
Then it's French
a bowl,
people.
I guess.
Bowl,
it's
ball.
It's shaped ball. With the bowl, and then you know, and for people who haven't used a Dutch oven, and I'm not saying they're giggling right now, but it really is a wonderful technique to make a beautiful loaf of bread that's relatively effortless, you know, in terms of.
Yeah, but I mean, the same concept can be applied to like a lot of things. Like if you have a really nice cast iron pan that you're obsessed with using, like that, boom. You can use that as a bread baking, a piece of equipment in bread baking.
Well, what I like about the Dutch oven is that it creates an enclosed hot environment because you preheat the Dutch oven, the iron there, and it's just like, it's
gets
the perfect,
nice and stinky.
Yeah, it's the perfect bread making environment. And, you know, in terms of like what something's very hot and popular in the TikTok food scene is flavored butters.
Oh, girl.
So sort of the same approach that people have with hummus, you know, they're doing that now with butters and putting all kinds of things into it.
Compound butters, as they call them.
And you're a pretty knowledgeable in that space as well.
Well, it reminds me of the time that guy had it was a restaurant in New York, and he kind of got busted by the health department because he was like using breast milk to make butter and cheese and stuff. And so I feel like that, like, yes to like I love the butter on TikTok, but like what about butter on OnlyFans? You know, I think you there's a good market there. You know, you send in breast milk and then I become a sexy lady and make it into butter and take pictures of sexy things with it and then mail it back to you know, like,
well,
I'm all about the coin, honey, and I think there's no, like, as great as TikTok is, I want the immediate return.
Yeah, we have actually in the can an episode of Cooking with Drag Queens with, from Dragula, and you know it's just
Disasterina.
I'm sorry, Disasterina.
Oh,
from
I
Dragula.
Love Disasterina.
And we got really drunk. She's like has this Glubler Schlobber
drink that we just kind of like
I was like, what is Glubler Schlobber? And she's like, I don't know what the fuck that is.
Just
you know,
make it into something.
So we're you know throwing everything in the kitchen sink into this glass till we made a black cocktail, and we're drinking this thing, and it just hit us really hard. And it was a very elaborate episode where we're making fresh ravioli in a Thai green curry sauce. And we
Asian cuisine, I love it.
Barely made it to the end. And so I posted a video that we filmed afterwards, and she was mad.
Well, because she broke out of her accent.
She broke out of, well, I don't know, you know if she
broke out of character.
Her Tommy, what's the name of the guy that she sounds like?
She says
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah. Tommy Wiseau, yeah. She's, oh, hello, Mar. You know, and I have to say, like, her and her wife is just lovely, lovely people. And really wonderful. Like,
I met Disasterina. They were at they did a show in Austin a couple. I keep referring to a couple of years back, like as if coronavirus didn't rob us of 3 years. So it's like going on 5 or 6 now. But they are one of those people that like, that's the character I aspire to be, you know, like they turn it on, they turn it off. And I want to get to a point where like, I have a character that I can get pissed at people about, like, you got me talking in my sexy voice. Like, I don't cut that out, you know, but unfortunately in and out of drag, I'm the same, you know, piece of shit. If anything, when I'm in drag, I try and ham up, you know, the masculine energy in my voice.
But it's interesting because, you know, as a person who makes all this delicious food, you're inviting people to participate in your creativity. And then in drag, you're sort of like pushing them away to some degree, right?
Oh, 100%. And I think that's like where the character development comes from is like my job, my professional life is so much devoted to being hospitable. You know, I spend my overnights baking. And then to circle back to like being able to turn it off and turn it on when I'm getting paid my date. Like I basically bartend banquet events. I bartend at a pool at a private hotel. And so I'm very like hospitable when I'm getting paid, and I'm very friendly when the time is right. And I think that's why as a drag character, it's important to show that like people aren't like that, you know, like especially when we're in our element being ourselves, we as members of the queer community aren't the ray of sunshine you're paying us to be all the time. Like we have to sometimes let down stress and, you know, be kind of a fucking mess because it's fun, you know, and at the end of the day, we're all human. We all hate something, you know. No one can go around saying like, "I love everything. Everything's great." You
Nina know, West not, can.
Oh. But Nina was like, "Keep my name out of your fucking mouth."
She's also in the tax bracket that she's not really worried about the same things I am. So
that hairspray money.
She got
the hairspray money.
She got hairspray money. She got Disney. She got Muppet money. Yeah, she got to do a duet with Kermit the Frog.
Yeah,
and I was just like, Miss Piggy busy that day?
She was, well, they confused her.
I don't know what property taxes are on Sesame Street, but wait, is that Sesame Street?
Sesame Street is in Brooklyn, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's probably fucking expensive.
It's like everybody had to move out. That's why it's all now CGI. I don't know if you watched it on HBO Max lately. You're like, what have you done to this show? It's heartbreaking.
I'm realizing now that Kermit the Frog is different than Sesame Street.
Kermit used to be a regular on Sesame Street.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the one who was in both.
Yeah, he was in both worlds.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The multiverse, the Muppet multiverse.
Many Kermits, the multiverse. My mom actually worked in Manhattan for a really long time in the 80s. And every time anything Jim Henson comes up, she'll always talk about how I was working across the street from the Jim Henson puppet factory when, you know, he died from his cold. You know, he had a flu and he died of a cold.
Oh. He did. So what happened with Jim Henson is that he was a Christian Scientist and did not believe in antibiotics. God. And he got a really, really bad case of strep that went to his heart. And he was working up until the minute he caught the strep from, I believe it was filming Labyrinth, where he was in a wetsuit in that scene where they like, there's all these farts in the swamp.
Oh, I love that. The Bog of Eternal Stench.
Yeah. So he's in the underneath and his wetsuit leaked. And so he caught a really bad cold, which developed into pneumonia and strep and all that stuff. And his family and friends were like, you need to go to the hospital. So he took the cab, but there was a traffic jam. He took himself to the hospital. So he walked 2 blocks and collapsed in the emergency room.
Jesus Christ.
And died shortly thereafter. And they're saying that had he not walked those 2 blocks, he probably would have lived.
And, so lesson learned, don't.
Take
Don't
your antibiotics, Christian Scientist, please. Gosh.
I'm surprised he wasn't more like his story wasn't more of like a thing when the anti-vaxxers were such a big deal.
Yeah, they're like, Jim Henson didn't take any vaccines.
Like, remember Jim Henson? Yeah. Don't be a fucking puppet.
Well, you know, and the thing about it is like, you know, in terms of the Muppet Workshop and Children's Television Workshop, there were a lot of queer people involved in that. Greer Langton. Mm-hmm. Was the
Bert and Ernie? They were pretty gay.
Well, I mean, in terms, Bert and Ernie are based on Laurel and Hardy, and they Laurel and Hardy are based on gay subtext. Mm-hmm. So even though they didn't intentionally base it on think of them as a gay couple, Laurel and Hardy's a lot of their humor was based on the fact the ridiculousness of the poverty at the time that two men had to live together as if they were husband and wife. Mm-hmm. And that was one of their movies.
And one of the writers for Sesame Street in the later years, maybe the 90s or the 2000s or something, he said he wrote Bert and Ernie when he wrote their thing. He thought of them as a gay couple, but I don't know if that really shows.
And then, of course, so Greer Langton, she built the first Big Bird, and she was a trans doll maker. Andy Warhol, protege. And, of course, there's the most famous is Richard Hunt, who gave life to scores of characters on Sesame Street, Fraggle Rock, and the Muppet Show.
His name was Dick Hunt?
Dick Hunt.
Richard Hunt.
Richard Hunt. He did a Scooter.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Dick.
His name's Dick Hunt?
That is a good porn name.
That's a great porn name.
Have you seen on Twitter, Neil Patrick Harris had to apologize for a tweet from like 11 years ago? I guess he and his husband had a party, and they had a Halloween party.
In the shape of Amy Winehouse's dead body right after she died.
Exactly.
Well, they had a
charcuterie board, and they had like attached to it. Ooh, on the buffet was a
that is gruesome.
It's pretty gruesome, you know. I
saw that tweet, and immediately I was kind of like, I want to see pictures of the charcuterie board. Like,
what kind of
food
was there?
Before I make a judgment, like how, like. If this is something, because you know the whole like, is it cake? Is it not cake? Like, mm-hmm. I want this to be more of a charcuterie trend thing. And it, like, if this is a spot on, it looks like a dead body, but oh, it's edible type situation. It's going to be hard for me to be mad at him because the craftsmanship, you know. But if it's just like shitty piece of bologna with a face cut into it,
and
like
some Vienna sausages. And,
well, you've seen you those know what I'm like, meatloaves made like to look like a baby.
And or a foot,
loaf. Or some no, they nope. shape meatloaf into faces and babies, you know, for like a shower, loaf. And it's just horrifying.
I mean, it depends on what kind of diet you're on, I guess.
Miss Anne kills and eats children.
Miss Anita, new diet.
Well, listen, you better get that abortion fast because in Texas, they're, you know.
Well, on the charcuterie board, you know, of course, you know, it's in bad taste, but it's Halloween and you're gay. Aren't you allowed to have bad taste at Halloween?
And I may feel like of all the people to get mad about, like the whole Amy Winehouse thing, like he's the last one. Like there's plenty of other people you can get mad about the whole Amy Winehouse thing. Like him making a charcuterie board is not the worst thing that someone did, you know?
Well, they did cancel La Pequeña.
Nobody knows.
No, La Pequeña?
No, so La Pequeña was a little person from Chile who was a regular on a morning radio program and had a viral videos when Hillary Clinton first ran for president, where she was dressed up first as Amy Winehouse and then as Hillary Clinton. And because Hillary Clinton didn't get the nomination, she became Hillary Hulk.
I love that.
And she ripped out of her Hillary Clinton costume into a little Incredible Hulk.
And she got canceled for that?
I'm just kidding. She just retired. I think he was a heterosexual guy and he was just doing it for fun.
Yo soy la pequeña Amy Winehouse.
No, yo soy la pequeña Amy Winehouse. Me encantan las drogas. I love drugs. They try to take me rehab. I say, no, no, no.
I want to get canceled so bad, but I feel like it's just not in my cards.
We've been canceled about 1,000 times. We're cancellation vampires. You know, like there's a subreddit dedicated to hating on us.
There was one, yeah. Like I had some beef with one of the Dragula girls that has since been healed. We've healed since then.
Who are you in a fight with?
Monarchy Shame and I had a little thing years ago.
Isn't that her like brand is to fight with people?
Was she the one who dressed like a monkey?
No, she was the one who dressed like a monster. Well, they all dress like monsters. But
this is a clear cut case of me like walking down the street, seeing a pile of shit and stepping in it. You know, like I kind of spoke up on something that like I should have just kept my fucking mouth shut. And she used it as an opportunity to kind of use her fans the best way she saw it. And it became this like big, like I said, there was a subreddit of people posting my work number and everything, trying to make it a thing. But at the end of the day, it was just like me saying, you know, she was drunk after a gig, which.
Well, do you think it was like a little sexual tension? Cause like out of drag, Monarchy Shame would make a cute boyfriend for you.
Nowadays they're like, holy Toledo. Now that Monarchy has like gotten their shit together is the best way to say it. Is just like, wow. Like for a while there, you know, there's that direct conclusion of like, oh, two dudes with tattoos. That's so hot. But back when she was kind of a mess, it was like, no, there's nothing attractive about that. But now that they're like really found their own and doing their best damn selves, I'm like, God damn, dude, like you are.
Yeah. Looking I can say you doing a little kai kai there.
Stay tuned for the OnlyFans.
Yeah. Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time drag queens from reality television started OnlyFans. A lot of them did. Because part of it is, I think, you know, there is, you know, United States, we don't fund the arts. And so people sort of look at being on television as a solution to the problem of living in a capitalistic society and having to make money.
Oh, I used to follow Monica. Now I even know who you're talking about. I used to follow them on Facebook,
but on man, Grindr.
They had some kind of, they had a meltdown of some kind, right?
Yeah. It was a,
there
big
was a
fight.
Lot of stuff going down there. So you're saying they got their kind of like, they got their shit together, huh?
They got their shit together. And I think there like, I don't really want to speak on too much of it. Cause it's their journey.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, they definitely like had some issues, that caused them to just kind of like, I don't know, it circles back to that whole, like, I think being in the public eye puts you on a plateau to kind of act a certain way. And when you develop a character that's like really devoted to being a hateful cunt, sometimes it's a slippery slope, you know? And when you're dabbling with issues, that kind of like take over your personality, it's easy to kind of really become that person as opposed to just like playing the character.
Yeah.
And I think now that they're in a better position in their life and like they're, you know, they have a lot more support. They're at a point now where like that character is a character and the person that really is a genuine good human being can come out when the character's not on, you know,
are you talking about them or you?
Both.
I think I remember they lost their mom to like a drug to drugs or something.
A drug addiction.
I remember.
Yeah,
and I remember a lot of people were just kind of like read him to filth for it, and just I remember.
Yeah, you know, and
a
I think
lot of pain.
There was a lot of pushback. I think, like I said, like when your character is someone that's kind of like fighting the world, it's easy to become that target. And at the end of the day, like the drag community and the queer community is, like you said earlier, like, I think we should, if you're getting the level of hate from 100,000 people, at the end of the day, you should be grateful that there's 100,000 people that are into the same shit you're into and a part of the same community you're into. Cause I hate to be, you know, one of those old men that likes it how it used to be. But I remember, you know, back in the day when you had to, you know, take a train an hour to go find half a dozen people that were into the same shit you were into.
Well, it's easier to be a Kardashian when you have money.
Girl,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm waiting for the
ain't
day.
Nothing worse than being broke and hated by everybody. You know?
But see, that's the thing about it, though. Like, that's kind of the position I'm in now, where like I'm embracing that, and like I like being. I think the best art comes from the people that have the most to say. And although I don't have the most to say in our world right now, I think like me as just like a broke dude making it day to day, in a world that's kind of like dead set on keeping broke people down. It's fun to document that, and it's fun to just kind of like show my side of not giving a shit. Cause it's hilarious. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's fucking hilarious to put on a pair of fake tits and just like throw caution to the wind and say, you know, I'm going to go throw some middle fingers out there and see what happens.
Well, all right.
Max Pancake Sage, aka Misanthrope. Thank you so much for sharing your deliciousness, both in the kitchen and in the runways and the nightclubs with us and everybody else. I'm dying to taste your food, your dishes.
Honestly, girl, let's do a dinner sometime. Let's get some drag queens together and do a drag queen brunch, but like an actual drag queen brunch where the drag queens do the brunch.
The thing about it is like cooking in the kitchen with a hot wig on is like
moida, sensible.
Yeah, but at the same time, like Peru. You've worked in Austin, girl. Yeah. You've seen where we've changed backstage. Like, there's no dressing room in Austin that's worse than a kitchen in Austin. And I've been in basically every kitchen and every dressing room.
We did a live podcast in Austin back in like 2006 or 7 in August at the Spider House. It was 105 degrees outside.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I've worked at the Spider House multiple times. That's like their backstage changing area. Like, you want to talk about the hell that's wearing a wig in a kitchen? Please, I'll take that. I'll take a wig in a kitchen over the Spider House ballroom any day.
Rest in peace, because Spider House went out of business, didn't they?
I think I may have been revamped or something. I'm not sure. They need like self-cooling wigs, like wigs that have some way to just cool the body.
Ooh, like a cooling circulation system through it. I like that.
Yeah. In January of this year, Spider House closed forever.
Womp womp.
Womp womp. See, you guys didn't even know it was closed.
Why drove?
I mean, honestly, it's one of those things that like we lost so many, but at the same time, like that was one place that paid us, I think, $50 for two numbers. So they weren't doing good when they were open.
Oh, you felt like they were sort of taking advantage of people.
No, I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that like I deserve more than $50 two numbers. I barely know.
$50 is a lot for some gigs.
For someone like me who doesn't put any effort into it. Yeah, you know, it's like it's just one of those things that like I think a successful bar has the ability to pay their performers more, whether they're worth it or not. And I think it was one of those establishments that was great for like I'm a kind of girl that like I said, I have so many full-time jobs that put food on the table that when it comes time to doing drag, it's hard for me to be picky and choosy about the opportunities, fitting it into my schedule. So Spider House was one of those places that if I had a friend or someone that was doing a show over there and they asked me to do it, I could probably fit it into my schedule.
Well, that's why you gotta know what you're worth and charge twice as much just in case. You're underestimating yourself.
I always just look up the Kelly Blue Book value.
Well, there was like we get asked to do pride events or festivals or host things all the time. And I'm just like, this is what it costs for me to take time off work,
yeah,
put the dog in daycare, and go over to your town and entertain your folks and make your business or your event money for 2 days, right?
My big thing is, like,
and they never want to pay it, you know? So I'm like, go get a Rue girl to do it.
And they'll do it, you know? The great thing about Austin for me is they have the TABC, and so you could go online and see what liquor sales at a bar is.
You know
what I'm saying? Like, if it's a bar who doesn't do drag and they reach out and they say, like, hey, we're looking to do some sort of drag thing, and I quote them a number that, like, someone would consider high, you know, you take into account how much it's going to cost to take off work and everything. But then I also, like, compare it to, like, well, y'all do that. Y'all do 3 or 4 times that in liquor sales on a Saturday afternoon anyway. So I'm not going to feel bad about shooting for the moon.
Well, and sometimes, you know, entertainment in a business of this kind is not the most appropriate solution. So for me, I'm like, hey,
that's what's so funny to me about seeing all these opportunities opening up for these girls down here. That's like, they're like taco trucks, or like, it's not the place for a drag show.
Well, and listen, I'm all about being weird for weird's sake and don't worry about the money, because we're doing it for the experience. Mm-hmm. But if it is an experience, it should be an experience that is, you know, enriching for everybody involved and not just one-sided.
Well, I think it also, I agree 100%. And I think it does boil down to, at the end of the day, what we do is a form of entertainment, and it has to be entertaining for someone other than the person doing it. And I'm all for opportunities and gigs for the sake of doing drag. But if you're not entertaining someone, like, it's essentially pointless. And I think these gigs that, like, the only people that show up are the ones that are performing. It's like, what are you learning as a performer? Because you're not really, like, entertaining anybody.
Amen, sister. Max Sage, where can people follow you on social media?
It's just my name, at the Max Sage.
The
Max
the.
Sage.
The.
Not what is to it be that they say in that Valley of the Dolls? What is it? Not the.
The Carrie Nations.
The Carrie Nations. I'm going to, like, this is what happens when you're married. Like, half of your brain is in your spouse. So all day long, it's Mark and I.
Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. The Roger Ebert
movie. The Trans Menace.
Yes. Well, it's a revealed letter on that the villain is. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
Is a trans man.
Suppressor.
And he was getting revenge because he couldn't fully express his gender identity. And that was that's the plot twist at the end. Thanks a lot, Roger Ebert.
That was a Jim Henson movie?
Yeah. And kids, that is Labyrinth with
oh yeah no, I remember the Bog of Eternal Stench. Yeah no, the Valley of the
that's
Dolls.
Actually the name of your new album, right?
That's actually the name of my new cologne.
You just splash a little bit between the ears and you pour the rest on your dessert.
Because scent is part of the illusion.
And one thing before we take off, it's like, you were given some really great challenges in Chopped. And one of them was, like, making a dessert where alcohol was the featured quality of it. You know, like and it pissed me off so much that the judges were like, this has too much booze in it. And I'm like,
oh, girl,
lady, what do you want? That is the assignment. That is the assignment.
Like, I was 8 months sober going into that episode. So it was so funny to me when they were, like, reading for me for too much alcohol. And I'm like, well, honestly, as a teetotaler over here, I think any alcohol is too much.
Did you go back to sobriety, or is it?
Oh, fuck no. What's the one where the on the wagon, off the wagon?
Well, you're doing you're going on a detoxing vacation.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. Coronavirus wiped out like, I don't drink at home. Like, I'm not like an at home drinker. I'm a very much a social drinker. So when coronavirus happened, it definitely, like, sparred me to not be able to drink as much anymore. But now I'm on, like, if I'm out and I'm a sexy lady and a handsome gentleman wants to buy me a drink, I'm going to do 4 or 5 shots and then take that drink from him, because obviously I'm a sexy lady.
Mm. I'll take the money.
Girl, nobody has money these days.
Listen, Cash App, Venmo, American Express will do nicely. Thank you.
Honestly, I have my wallpaper saved on my phone as my QR code for Venmo. So now anytime I'm out in drag and someone's like, can I get a picture? I'm like, absolutely. Can I get a fiver?
So you're like like those people dressed up as Spider-Man and Batman and
what exactly. Is it?
In LA.
Exactly. Standing in Times Square.
Times Square, like, yeah.
Take a picture. $5.
$5. Come on, lady. Probably that's, you know, the thing about it is like $5 for most people who can afford to go to a nightclub is not a lot of money.
And honestly, girl, I'll be, it started as a joke. It started as kind of like anytime someone would ask us for a picture, I'd say, oh, sure. Do you have Venmo or Cash App? Just kind of like she's a snarky cunt thing to say. But then it became like, well, let's see if actually people will pay. And I come from the world of drag in New York, where just like showing up to a club in drag was kind of like a reason to get bought a drink or given a tab or treated with some sort of specialness. But nowadays you don't get that special treatment. So you kind of got to give it to yourself by when people notice you and see that you're in a nice look and ask for that picture. It's like, well, it's not going to pay for itself and someone has to. So I really firmly believe closed mouths don't get fed, and the people that are out at the club that have the money, if you ask for it, will give it to you, you know, because you're standing there looking gorgeous. Like I'm not, you know, standing out in front begging to get into the club. You know, I'm in the club paying for my own drinks. It'd be nice to get a little help.
Well, and that's why love always has to be the secret ingredient.
I thought whole pictures were the secret ingredient.
Max, it's always a delight talking to you. I love you so much.
It is a pleasure.
I love you inversely to how much you hate people.
I hate them so much. They're the worst.
And please, if you're in Chicago, let's bake up a storm and spread that butter on your hot toast.
Absolutely. And one last thing, guys, before you go, It's crazy to think about that, like 35 years ago, Princess Diana was all over the radio and the dashboard and the windshield and the steering wheel.
Oh, it's not that time of year.
It's too soon. I know. Too soon.
I had to bite my tongue. But like, honestly, Princess Diana jokes are a huge part of my repertoire in drag. So I had to throw one in there.
Well, okay, what did you make of the Princess Diana musical that was on Netflix?
Oh, God. I feel like if it wasn't a musical, I would have watched it. But the fact that it was a musical just made it that much more gay. And I just couldn't. I can't. You know, we're living in a time where it can't get too gay.
Did you watch the Kristen Stewart movie with Diana? As Diana?
Yes. Loved it.
I loved it, too. Fausto hated it.
I hated it. I was just like, this is Kristen Stewart, not Diana.
She was the people's princess. How dare you?
Kristen Stewart or Diana?
I liked it when she was like, well, please listen to the room. Leave the room. I want to masturbate.
I was hosting like a gig like probably 8 or 9 years ago on Halloween. And I was like dressed as Frankenfooter. And I get up there and there, you know, there's live bands. And they're like, okay, we need you to just buy 5 minutes, right? Just talk on the mic for 5 minutes while we set up the band. And I'm like, okay. So I get up there and I give 5 minutes of banter. And then they're like, actually, we need about like 25 minutes. Can you do it? And I'm like, shit. So I just get up there and start telling Princess Diana jokes. And after my like first or second Princess Diana joke, this like middle-aged woman in the back of the crowd that was there by herself just like starts screaming, no, no, how dare you? She was the people's princess. And like proceeded to like walk up to the stage and throw the biggest bitch fit. And ever since then, I'm sold on it.
Where is the security?
Apparently they were paying me to do security that night, but I just had gotten on stage.
I was working in a restaurant the night she died, and I called my boyfriend at the time, you know, hey, what's going on? He's just like, Princess Diana just died in a car accident. And I was just like, what? And so I told some people at work, and this one gay waiter that I worked with, he just looked at me and was just like, how dare you make that up? You're so lying. And like, he was so mad at me, like
for the so rest invested. Of the shift.
And I was just like, listen, I'm just telling you what I just heard. Do you know what I mean? I guess I probably should have waited till the shift was over or something before I spilled the news. But yeah,
something
I
mean, that happened.
People were shooketh. Do we still say shooketh?
Sure, why
I
not?
I think so.
Okay.
Everything old is new again. You know that.
Do you know what Princess Diana and Pink Floyd had in common?
The Wall.
The last great hit was The Wall. All right, it's been a pleasure talking to you, boys.
Love you, Max Sage.
Max,
I love you. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
Max Sage, Miss Anthrope, lives in Austin, Texas. You can taste their tasty delights at various restaurants and places around.
Right? She works as a baker at For Better Half in Austin, Texas, and Holdout Brewing. So it's a bar/restaurant where you can get her desserts.
Oh.
So if you saw and her episode is Boozy Baskets, Season 1, Episode 2. On Chopped Sweets. Mm-hmm. So it's a spinoff of Chopped.
Yes. And if you run into her in public, ask her for her best Diana joke.
Man, this is a good one. That's like
people are very sensitive.
That's
about
at the
Lady
level
Diana.
Right there of Lady Bunny, you know? Mm-hmm. This is what, you know, this is what I find exciting about drag. You know? Don't you just feel the
people that want to upend the system.
Do you feel the difference in energy, listeners? You know the difference here, right? This is what Feast of Fun is about. We're not giving you basic bitches, honey. Basic bitches
need
not
apply.
Listen to this good shit.
I don't think we call people basic anymore unless you're pretending to be Anna Delvey.
What is a synonym for basic then? You know, boring, bland. Mm. This is not why we do this show.
Commercial.
Pandering. We used to say the term lowest common denominator.
Oh, yeah. LCD.
And sometimes, you know, with being an iconoclast or rebel does come with it's a difficult road both for the artist and their community.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, we're all better for it. You know, they stand outside of our world and they're able to see things in a different way. And so we're richer for it. Because of their unique perspective. And, you know, Max is an extraordinary confectionery artist. And you can see that in the show, you know. It's interesting, like, how many queer people are attracted to desserts. And it was interesting, too, because, like, for a while, like, baking a wedding cake was, like, the battle royale frosting of LGBT equality in the United States. Like, you couldn't, it was like the right to say no to a gay couple, same-sex couple getting married, you know. But if you're trans,
I won't bake that cake.
But I will bake
a cake for a murderer.
Who? What murderer?
People murder all the time and have cakes baked for them.
But they don't say,
don't,
like,
tell them it's a murder.
Congratulations
you
on
cake.
Knocking
you just don't
off
tell
your,
them it's for gay people.
Knocking off Cheryl and accounting.
And the number one thing, if you ever want to buy a wedding cake and you want to save some money, don't tell them it's for a wedding. Tell them it's for your parents' 50th anniversary party or something. It's half the price.
My mother loves the color white.
You know, don't get a white wedding cake.
Yeah, white, wet, basic bitches not wanted. Hello.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to such wonderful people like Max Sage, Miss Anthrope, if it weren't for you and the people throughout the years who have stepped up and said, I love Feast of Fun. I love what they're doing. I want to support the show. I want to make sure it's there 2 years from now when I want to continue to listen to it.
Yeah. And it only happens because of you fierce, fabulous, amazing, legendary people that listen and tune in and support the podcast.
And coming up is Pride Month next month. Show some pride, make a little donation to your favorite queer podcast at feastoffun.com/donate.
We're also on Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun. If you're already on Patreon, it doesn't take much trouble. Just go to Feast of Fun on Patreon and follow us.
There you go.
Yeah. And if you're listening to the show on any podcast platform, write us a review. Tell people how much you hate us.
Yeah. Share it.
Tell, if you don't like us, also say that too. Mm-hmm. We want to hear back
from
you.
You don't like his Diana jokes? Let Apple know.
Yeah. Max Sage, canceled.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.